Byron McElroy. Lend your hair to an old gray bar.
Oh, you gotta help, Ben Wade.
Well, would you look at all this? Y'all spared no expense this time, Byron. I gotta say, though, it's probably cheaper just to let me rob the damn thing.
You're gonna kill me. Just as soon get to it.
I ain't gonna kill you. Not like this.
Won't change a thing. Let me live. I'll come for you.
I'd be disappointed if you didn't.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I'm your host, Jason Bishop, on the High Plains with Trish Coughlin.
Hey, everybody.
And Sam Stepanenko is drawing the coach.
Yes.
He's going to take the gunfire while me and Trish get away.
Yeah, I always get shot first.
Well, yeah. Well, we don't mean to. You volunteered.
I don't remember volunteering. Was I voluntold?
Oh, wait. Yeah, that's what happened.
I also call him Cookie. Because you got to have the crazy cook.
Oh, you do. You have to have, yeah, and the cook is like always called Cookie.
Yeah, except there's no cookie in this movie.
No, there in either iteration of it, there's no cookie.
No cookie.
There's no cook.
But we do have a town drunk in one.
Well, yeah. Kind of in both of them.
Kind of.
Yes, the doctor vet guy kind of replaced that character.
Yeah, they kind of wasted a good actor who didn't actually get to be the town drunk as much as he should have been.
No,
yeah.
they considering that it was half an hour longer than the original, they really didn't use some of their really great
And that character has a big arc, and there's no arc for that character in the remake at all.
The reason for the extra half hour is they decided to just add a whole bunch of other shit into it.
Well, we'll definitely get into that. We're going to be talking about 310 to Yuma, a nice break from the carnage that we have gone through for the last 7 weeks now.
Well, it's been Western movies. Carnage.
Well, more of that classic gunfighting. I don't know. I wanted to be as the biggest break I could from horror.
Well, after. And that first the original is it's not a lot of action. It is very much a character drama.
Oh, so
for
good.
Sure.
For sure. Very little actual action in it.
Yeah. But it's engaging for this entire 90-minute run.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Jinx, give me a beer.
No problem.
I didn't realize how good this was actually going to be, and this was probably one of my more recent favorites. And I don't know, every time we do a Western as of late, they're just great. And maybe that's because when Hollywood sees a good Western and remake it shittily, they know a good Western when they see one. And I gotta say, they didn't remake it shittily. For the most part, I really did enjoy the remake. I have some bones of contention with that ending, though, because there's nothing wrong with a more optimistic Western.
No, I have to agree.
Or a movie in general.
I was actually actively pissed off at the ending.
I was, too. Yeah. I was like, but I also wasn't nearly engaged in Christian Bale's version of that character. So,
well, I wasn't engaged in neither Russell Crowe's or Christian Bale's character. Like, I think the upbeat ending of the original one, I like it because it actually muddies the difference between good and bad more than the remake does. Like, it really, you don't really know whose side you're on. It's so good.
Well, and I think that's because Glenn Ford was not only charismatic but charming.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you liked him. Even though you know he's a bad guy, you liked him.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I think realistically, in the end, Dan probably, in that situation, would have died. So, in Mansgold version, fine. But yeah, at the same time, when it comes to the story arcs, it really kind of waters down what should have been a more optimistic ending, and especially looking like a hero in the eyes of his children.
Yes. Yeah. And I like,
and not being there to enjoy that.
Yeah, and I like the way that they handled that element in the remake. I love the way they changed that, where it's not his wife who follows him, but his son.
Yeah.
And the son who's really doesn't have a lot of faith in his father,
mm-hmm.
and he just sees that his father really is the man that he thought his father should be in the first place. Mm-hmm. I love that arc. I love that. But again, the ending kind of sucked some of that out for me, right? Because it mm-hmm. didn't really work for me.
No, he died heroically being shot in the back.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Spoilers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You had 10 years to watch it.
Yeah. And not only that, I mean, even his death wasn't really the part that bothered me the most. It was the way they handled Russell Crowe's reaction. I didn't buy that he cared enough about this character to take that kind of action.
Right.
Where he shoots down his entire gang.
Russell Crowe just feels like he's playing a game through that whole movie.
It strikes me, you know, this reminded me very much when we were discussing Brian Cox playing Hannibal versus Anthony Hopkins playing Hannibal. Glenn Ford is charismatic, interesting, engaging. Russell Crowe is more of a thug. In Hannibal, it's sort of the same thing. And it's sort of, I think part of the movie should be that this bad guy, quote unquote, is very charismatic, very engaging. You sort of want to spend a lot of the story with him. His ending, his purpose, you get it. There's sort of a, he has a code. He might be a bad guy, but he definitely has a code
for
the whole movie.
I mean, I loved Glenn Ford's version of Ben Wade. And I got to say, I really liked Russell Crowe in there as well. But he does have his moments where it's like, hey, I'm just going to remind you today, like, I'm the bad guy.
Yeah.
And he definitely has those moments. But really, it's his gang, and specifically
Ben Foster.
Ben Foster as Charlie Prince. And Charlie in both movies is the more typical bad guy, thief, whatever. He'll gun you down for just looking at your cross-eyed.
Ben Foster is a sociopath.
Ben Foster's, I loved his performance.
Oh, I do too.
I thought he was basically the best thing in it.
I mean, there's lots to look at in Mangold's version. I don't know if it's because Wade has empathy for Dan or just like, well, his kids deserve that to see him in a better light or just wound up liking Dan. But he certainly liked him a lot more than his gang. I kind of liked Ben a little bit more. Well, I definitely liked Ben more in the original.
Absolutely.
Where his gang, they tried to figure out the most passive way to do things without killing too many people. And if anything went wrong, he had guys, like, they already had it all figured out. Okay, well, here's where they could take our guys. And
he was smarter.
Yeah.
He was a much smarter character.
More intelligent, and there was a code to what they were doing. They didn't want to gun down people. They're like, no, we're just here for your gold, and that's all we want.
There's regret.
Don't be heroes.
In that stage hold up, at the beginning where they had to kill the driver.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, they actually regretted having to do that.
Yeah.
But then they do the right thing. We're like going, we're going to take your horses and stuff, but I mean, you get him back to where he should be buried. That's your job. Mm-hmm. We'll take our guy.
If it had been like the 1970s or 80s, Ben Wade would have been a Bond villain. He's just really charming. He's hard not to like.
See, I love that murkiness.
But you're supposed to like him.
Yeah.
Right, and he's polite. The first thing I noticed when they rob the stagecoach, he's really polite to everybody. And
and when it comes
polite to Dan when he steals the cattle, but they're
they're just using it to stop the coach. And he tells Dan, he tells the other guy, tell him to stay away. He doesn't want to kill his guy and his sons.
No, they're witnesses, but he doesn't want them running to the authorities before they can get to town. So, like, we're going to take your horses and release them just outside of Bisbee. And you can get your horses back. You got your cattle back, take them back to your ranch, and that gives them enough time to get away as well. They didn't want to.
He's like, we're just borrowing
kill this
them.
Family. Yeah. I like that that's in both movies.
I do like that.
A lot of it's the structures in both movies.
Well, the structure is definitely there in both movies. Yeah. I mean,
the same lines, it's not always delivered but from the same people, but sometimes the line for line.
Yeah, no, and I enjoyed that. That's one of the things I like about a remake that's reasonably well done is when they use an appreciable amount of the dialogue where it works. Mm-hmm. Right, without having to copy it directly.
Yeah, there wasn't too many scenes like that, but the bar scene stands in mind as one of the more direct ones when he's hitting on the bartender. that he remembers from another town.
Yeah. Well, it takes outside the bar in the original, inside the bar in the thing, and then it's green eyes versus blue eyes.
Why the hell was the marshal's office in the bar? Like, I can tell you can get away with anything in Bisbee because the marshal's probably drunk 24/7.
There's probably, well, I'm guessing, you look at Bisbee, there's probably maybe three buildings.
Yeah.
That's why.
It was small.
If he's going to bust drunks, he just takes them into the next room.
At least he had an actual sheriff's office in the remake.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, I think that in a lot of these classic movies, you'd see a lot of the sort of these multi-purpose buildings, partly to save on sets, I'm guessing.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, even the remake wound up run out of money, so I think it was the contention set where some of the buildings looked unfinished just because they ran out of money.
They were literally unfinished.
Which I think is great because it does look like a town that's being built.
It's growing, yeah.
And is growing.
Or is failing and is stopped partway through construction. That was kind of the feeling I got from it because there's nobody actively working on those sites, right?
There were lots of little historic Easter eggs in there, and some were murky, so you could say it was about
1889.
Well, I think it was like 1845 to about 1855, based on some of the stuff they were showing us. I mean, there were some guns they were using that was kind of after, but you'd see a sign with some dude's name on it, and turns out Contention was a neighboring town to Tombstone, and the dude's name was the guy who founded Tombstone.
But they're thinking
lots of things for those cowboy geeks.
In both movies, yeah. Like, there's one thing with the cowboy geeks or historical geeks. There was a particular, I'm trying to remember, it was a general or something. He died because of a tongue infection, because of a bite on his tongue, and it's in both movies. And he died July 1st, like 1889. So they're saying that basically this would have happened in August of 1889.
Yeah, I thought it was earlier than that, but... But then they'd have a gun that was made after that, so it's
that happens in a lot of westerns.
Yeah, it's
though.
Not specifically accurate, but there's enough in there to make you happy if you're more of a historical old west nerd.
Mm-hmm.
Nerd,
a western nerd. That's different.
I don't know. My dad might have been one of those. I don't think he would have been into the historical aspects of that.
Yeah, well, no. I know a lot of people who like know a lot about guns, and actually, it is quite interesting to see some of the older versions of some of these items.
I mean, I love westerns. I've always loved westerns. I mean, more so like they're sort of the Clint Eastwood style westerns. But I'm developing a great love for some of these older still westerns, like High Noon and this one is Three Times.
Oh, High Noon certainly informs this one for sure.
Yeah, like we were saying before we started, it's reverse High Noon.
In a lot of ways,
It's the same type of film too, because it's a character study, right? Yep. It's not about the events that are about to happen. It's about that journey, right? which made it so compelling.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of dialogue in the original movie, not a lot of action, even when they take down the stagecoach. By the time like the movie starts, they've already done it. It's already in progress.
Mm-hmm.
But in the remake, you know, we got to add to that. We got to actually show you them taking.
You
got to
add
a
Gatling gun. You've got to add about five more people.
Well, that's the bounty hunter who's literally to defend the shipment as well as an opportunity to maybe actually take down Ben Wade and his gang.
But yeah, that brings up my first bone of contention with this movie is, I'm sorry, but what bandit in their right fucking mind is going to chase down a stagecoach that has a Gatling gun
on it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it did take them a long damn time for them to remember it was on the goddamn stagecoach.
And the guys running the Gatling gun sucked.
Yes, they did. Yeah. But, I mean, they lost quite a few guys to that Gatling gun.
Oh, well, they lost four.
But, I mean, that's a third of their gang?
Yeah, but, I mean, that Gatling gun should have been able to mow them down within seconds.
Yes, so that was my...
And not just them. It should have probably, realistically, their horses, there should have been dead horses. There should have been guys dead simply because their horses got shot.
Yeah. Oh, the one that got blowed up.
Yes.
They're like, yo, you're riding around with a bunch of dynamite, and they shot it, and then the whole horse and cowboy get blown up. I'm like, oh, damn, okay, well, I can see what we're doing with the remake.
Yeah. Well, and see, that's what
sets a tone, doesn't it?
True. And what I found kind of interesting about the original one is there's portions where they're not taking the shot for various reasons. In fact, at the very end of the original one, he takes a horse and they use it as cover and the guys aren't shooting it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's because you just like horses are valuable.
They're incredibly valuable.
Oh, they're very valuable.
So you wouldn't shoot at it. Yeah. But in this one, it's sort of like the people who remade the Western forgot that.
Yeah. I mean, there was also in the original, they're not just hauling gold, but they're hauling people. Whereas this one, it was pretty much an armed stagecoach.
Yeah.
Specifically for the shipment. And they're all Pinkertons.
Yeah. Well, yeah. For some reason, mm-hmm. they're transferring a payroll to a dead town.
Yeah.
Right. Because.
Well, they had to add a whole sub story about the train, about the railway.
Oh, that's right. Yes, that's right.
The whole there's this whole added sub story about the railway, and then another sub story about the Civil War.
Well, the train coming through was a sub story about Dan and his land. It wasn't just redirecting the water off the land and suffering on his farm because of drought. It was. Mm. Because this landowner was trying to drive them off because it was worth more
and
to them
burning
off
down
of it.
His barn.
Yeah, that really irritated me.
Me too.
Yeah.
I was like,
it's really just to paint these guys as bad guys and so you could kill them later and not feel bad about it.
Yeah, I don't think it really added anything. I mean, if you're already in debt and you're on a farm, and trust me, I've been on a farm when drought has been happening, and you don't need to add to that to feel that fear and that peril.
No, and they wasted a great actor in that too, right? Yeah. In that role.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll talk about him. I'm going to run the trailer for the original one, and we will talk more about that actor and a whole lot more.
There is a lonely train called the 310 to Yuma. The pounding of the wheels is more like a mournful sigh. There's a legend and there's a rumor, when you take the 310 to Yuma, you can see the ghosts of outlaws go riding by.
Riding by.
In the sky.
In the sky.
Think you'll ever get back to Bisbee?
Oh, it don't look like it.
I ain't complaining. I got something to remember.
Don't move. It's the Marshal, Wade. He's got a shotgun on you.
Soon it would be 310. The glasses were empty. The guns were loaded. Soon a man, scared but brave, would run an outlaw gauntlet to put a prisoner on the gallows-bound train to Yuma.
Dan! They're coming. Get the sheriff. Tell him to get as many deputies as he can.
The sheriff's out of town.
What?
What do you mean he's out of town?
He took a prisoner to Tucson.
You know, when I was having supper at your house last night, I got to thinking maybe someday I'd like to have a wife. Must be real nice having a couple of boys like that to ride out with every morning, and then a woman like that every night.
I told you before to shut up. Now you say just one more word and I'll cut you down now.
Don't go through with it, dear.
No, I've got to.
Oh, Dan, I don't want a hero. I want you.
You know, I never have been able to give you very much. And sometimes not even enough food for you and the boys. Well, maybe this will be something worth remembering.
What are you saying?
End of the line, mister.
Okay, 310 to Yuma from 1957, the original, directed by Delmer Daves. And the original story was by Elmore Leonard. It was a dime novel.
A short story, wasn't it?
It was a short story.
Short story, yeah, in a dime novel. And the screenplay was by Halstead Wells. Now, this movie starred Glenn Ford as Ben Wade. He's the lead, and the co-lead is Van Heflin as Dan Evans. And I gotta say, I think I like his casting a little bit more because he has a more tortured look to him. He does look worried.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases, he looks afraid. I never get that out of Christian Bale. he's trying to give you the best Clint Eastwood squint he can while still being tortured. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
I think they went too far in making him such a like down on his luck character. The original guy,
they did.
You can see him. Yeah, you can see him being afraid and stuff. But there's a bit of hope there, mm-hmm. which makes him just. It makes more sense that he would try really hard. Whereas mm-hmm. Christian Bale is like a whipped dog who has nothing to lose.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it, actually.
Felicia Farr, Leora Dana, Henry Jones, Richard Jekyll, Robert Emhart, Sheridan Comerate, George Mitchell, Robert Ellenstein, and Ford Rainey. That's pretty much the entire cast. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing about old movies is you can get their entire list and it's like, oh, right, that's everybody.
Can I ask which one was the guy who played the drunk?
The drunk was Henry Jones. That was okay. Alex Potter, a.k.a. the town drunk.
Because, yeah, he seems so familiar. I've obviously seen him in other movies from that kind of era, but he makes really like a good town. Like, he's a town drunk, but he doesn't seem so far gone that he's useless.
Yeah, and that was the case of when they're looking for people. They wake him up. He's like, oh, you know I don't drink before noon.
Yeah. I don't drink till the stroke of noon. And I'm like, awesome.
Yes. Yeah. But and his wife is like the classic enabler. Mm-hmm. You know he's got rheumatism, right? Like, she just does not want him to go.
Yeah.
I mean, like, she's happy living with the town drunk.
I know. Yeah. I don't get it.
Well, you know, he's at the bar, leaving her alone. And
yeah,
it's a perfect relationship.
I don't know about that.
He doesn't really like his wife. I think she's the reason he drinks to begin with.
I don't think either of them like each other. I think it's just bad. She likes him to drink because at least he's quiet when he passes out, and he drinks because he doesn't want... It's terrible. It's a terrible marriage.
Yeah, but he's got a pretty good arc. He's kind of got to battle his mm-hmm. moments, and you can kind of blame his itchy trigger finger when everybody's having dinner on DTs, you know? Like, he even asks at some point, and one of Dan's sons says, Pa said you'd ask.
I love that bit. And I think that's sort of one of his moments where he realizes, like, oh, yeah, maybe I've let this get too far.
Yeah.
Is he Dan in the original or is he Dale in the original?
Sorry?
Is he Dan in the original or Dale?
It's Dan.
It is Dan?
It's Dan Evans. Okay. It's Dan Evans in both of them.
Okay. For some reason, I thought it was Dale Evans, but I'm maybe thinking of the
actress. Oh, the actress who's a lot of Westerns.
And I thought that might be why they changed the name in the remake, but I'm guessing
Dan Evans is the farmer, rancher guy, and the drunk is somebody different.
Is Alex,
And Henry Jones's counterpart is Alan Tudyk, who I thought was
underutilized.
Well cast and definitely underutilized, especially given that character actually has an arc to overcome. I mean, he tragically dies, but you don't feel as bad when it happens this go around because you never get to see that character develop the way he should.
Mm-hmm.
And he was perfectly cast.
Yeah, half the time you forget he's there.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is bad because I never forget when Alan Tudyk was there.
That was the thing. They only had two volunteers, whereas there was a lot more to bring Wade in and take him into Yuma at that point. I mean, you had Peter Fonda's maybe I'll just do the whole thing here, but you had Peter Fonda's Byron McElroy going mm-hmm. and of course he had just been gut shot earlier in the film, so that's why Alan Tudyk Doc Potter goes with to kind of mm-hmm. make sure, well, if he's going, I'm going to make sure I'll go too because he's going to need a doctor. And then you have some of the town interests as well. Glenn Hollander, who owns Dan's land, mm-hmm. sends one of his boys, which is Kevin Duran Tucker, who earlier in the film burned down Dan's barn.
Yeah.
Yeah. So 3:10 to Yuma from 2007 was directed by James Mangold. You might remember him from Walk the Line, Copland, and most recently Logan. And I do want to talk about that because I think movies like 3:10 to Yuma really inform Logan as a movie as well.
And Logan is
amazing.
They
have very similar themes. The screenplay was by Michael Brandt and Derek Haas, and they had written things like Chicago Fire, Too Fast, Too Furious, and Wanted. And, of course, starred Russell Crowe, Christian Bale, Ben Foster, Logan Lerman, Dallas Roberts, Peter Fonda, Vanessa Shaw, Alan Tudyk, and Gretchen Mol's in here. Luke Wilson had a small part as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty big and well-known cast.
For the most part, yeah.
For the most part. I mean, it had a pretty decent budget for a modern Western, $55 million. As good as that film is, it still didn't do that great in the theaters. $71 million in the theater, so it didn't even really break even if you think marketing and whatnot. But it's definitely one of the better Western remakes I've seen.
Well, it's 2007, which I believe Magnificent Seven also did the same year, wasn't it?
No, that was just a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I got that wrong.
Yep. You did.
I don't know.
I'm trying to go back through my pages and find it.
Yeah, no, it wasn't that old. It was only 2000.
Yeah, it's 2016.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like they keep trying. They'll do like one Western every few years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We see these little minor resurgences every decade or so because we had the Coward Robert Ford,
right?
Which I still haven't seen yet, actually.
I kind of want to because if it's filmed around here, I'd be like, oh, cool.
Yes.
I love watching movies where you're like, I recognize that.
Once was enough.
It's really cool. Well, that's why I like watching original Superman, because I'm like, oh, I know where that is. Mm-hmm. That's near Vulcan.
Well, that's the thing. Alberta, we're known for the Westerns specifically, because we actually have a permanent Western set here.
Actually, I think we have two now.
Two? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think they might even been old townships that have just been maintained and now have become movie sets.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And if you want like certain varieties of stuff, we got the mountains for like your mountain shots. We got like the Badlands for some sort of out in the middle of nowhere places.
Yeah, there was a shot they were doing, and I can't remember where they filmed the remake, but they got a big dump of snow on them, and they had to haul all the snow behind the cameras and then cover everything up with dry dirt again. No wonder they didn't have enough money to finish the buildings.
No kidding. Yeah. Wait a day. It's probably going to melt anyhow. Go shoot an inside scene.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Change your shooting schedule.
I don't know. It's a dump of snow.
You don't know if you know that it's going to stay cold for the next 6 days. I think they only had 6 days left to shoot.
You're kind of stuck.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things. It's kind of funny because of the resounding theme throughout the original where the weather, you can't make it rain, you can't do anything. Yeah. And then in this one, it does something you don't want it to do.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't make it unsnow.
Yeah, there's definitely an irony there for sure, yeah.
But yeah, I guess the army of people that had to shovel that up and then 80-some-odd dump trucks of dirt later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I want to go back to something because you'd mentioned Peter Fonda's character being gut shot. And it brings up one of the things that bothered me about that and Christian Bale's missing leg.
Yes.
Neither of them suffered any mobility issues for missing a limb or being gut shot.
You see in the opening things when he hasn't put on his foot yet, him hopping around and whatnot. But a lot of the times within the film, it doesn't seem to hamper him too much.
No,
his stride is too natural.
Yeah.
Which is disappointing because, I mean, Christian Bale is typically a fairly good physical actor. And I'm not sure why they didn't sort of emphasize the fact that he has this disability. Because, I'm sorry, but in the late 1800s, a wooden prosthetic leg, you are going to lurch like a motherfucker.
And you're going to have to have a cane of some kind.
And they do bring it into the story, so seeing him walk around, he doesn't play it up as much unless it's a scene that specifically calls for it.
Yeah.
And you're not running around with a wooden leg, really.
No, that rooftop scene, I'm like, there's no fucking way.
He can't.
Oh, yeah,
he's
can't jumping
jump.
Rooftops with a wooden leg. Yeah.
Like, I like the moment where he was lucky he got shot in the foot, the wooden foot.
Yeah.
And that's a great moment. But it's just really unrealistic.
Mm-hmm. Yes, right. I mean, there's one point where they run across the roofs and the roofs. I don't know.
The roofs are on fire. Yeah. Not one, but all of them.
Yeah. Yes. Where Ben says to him, "Do you think he can make it?" Right, in reference to the fact that that he does have only one functioning leg.
Yeah.
But
the answer should have been no.
The answer should hell no.
Yeah, that bugs me that Ben's the one that's dragging Dan to the train.
I don't know. I think they were trying to like
it feels like a last minute decision on Ben's part in the original where it's like it's the last half hour of the film.
Well, it seems at the end in the original one it seems he's completely thinking he's going to get away this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end it doesn't really seem to come out of nowhere because he kind of admires Dan throughout the way because like he can't buy him.
Mm-hmm.
He can't charm his way out of it. I think he respects him in that way. So he's kind of like, this guy is somebody who's got something. And in this other one, I don't think he gets that.
Mm-hmm. One thing I liked in the remake, they added it well because when that clock hits 3 o'clock and they go head into the train, it is exactly 10 minutes to the train's arrival.
Yeah.
I thought it was a little bit more because don't they get there?
They do. They do say the train's late.
Yes. But
yeah. When it arrives, it's 10 minutes. I'm like, oh, nice.
Yeah, no, that was really well handled. They did a little bit of real time in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love the fact that the train was – that was the one item I liked, was the train was late, because that was very indicative of that time. That's the only reason we have time zones, is because trains were always late, or they'd have discrepancies between when trains would arrive, because every individual town would set their clocks based on what the sun was doing. So there was no real time in any particular place. So that's why we have time zones.
In the original, it's like dead on time. It's always –
Yeah.
3:10. I'm like, it's not the 3:12, it's the 3:10.
And if you've ever taken a train in other countries, never on time. Like, the LRT is never on time. Like, nothing is on time on rails.
Yeah, it's true.
It's very true.
One thing goes wrong, everything down the chain, down the line, and ahead of the line gets fucked up.
Yeah, never put your plans around trains. Just don't. Unless you're in a movie.
Unless you're in a movie.
And then it will be fine.
Yeah, I'll go with that. I don't take trains.
No, I did in the UK, and that's sort of the other reason why they didn't have time zones before then, because the UK was such a small country, and you weren't getting too much discrepancy between one side to the other. But then you get to Canada and the US, such a broad country, you're going to have all the discrepancies. So, yeah, fun facts.
And relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Yay, science. Now that you've driven all of our listeners away, that's great. Thanks.
Well, you know what? If they don't want to listen to us and learn something, then don't listen.
No, don't say that.
We talk about movies. We're not supposed to learn things.
And it's not really strictly science. It was just about getting something that was everybody was on the right page.
It's still kind of science. The science of...
It was more engineering. It was done by a Scottish engineer.
There we go.
Can't remember his name. Used to know it off the top of my head.
Okay, so, I mean, something I want to talk about with Ben Wade and his gang, I mean, we see him rob that stagecoach at the beginning of the film, and then they go into Bisbee and report it.
Oh, I love
that. So, to drive the marshal and his posse to the stagecoach site and hopefully to catch the villains who are the ones sending them away. So, it gives them time to come down from the heist, get a couple drinks, gather their forces, and make their plan of where they're going next.
Mm-hmm.
So his men ride ahead, and they probably would all left together, but Ben's smitten with the bartender waitress.
Now, that's something that made me wonder. I almost wonder, and this kind of would play into the end of the film as well, is it almost seems like he wanted to get caught. Right? There's that moment there I'm thinking, he wants to get caught. He knows that they're coming back. He knows he has to know they're coming back, right?
He's so confident about like he gets caught. Like, okay, I can get laid. They'll catch me. I'll escape. It's what I do. It's not even a doubt in his mind that he's going to get away.
Yeah. Well, it's weird. I'm trying to remember what other villain. It's also very kind of Hannibal, where he's caught and he's like, no, I will just get out of this at another point.
Oh yeah, no, he's a schemer. He's completely confident in his men and his own abilities.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So at no point is he really worried about actually having to go to jail.
Yeah, no. Maybe it's not that he wanted to get caught, but there's a lack of concern with getting caught.
Yeah.
Or I wonder if this actually
kind of... And it just really is a game to him.
Yeah, that's it. Like, he's playing a game with them. He's playing a game with... He plays games with people.
Oh, yeah. No, he's constantly examining the people around him and poking and prodding, psychologically speaking, in both films, but really a lot in the original film.
Yeah. And a lot more subtly.
Subtly, yeah. Yeah. And he does it kindly, where sometimes he presses in the original, or in the remake, he is pressing buttons and seeing what he can get away with, especially with Dan during that dinner time. And that was, in both movies, the dinner time is when he's really testing to see the quality of the man that Dan is, and I don't think he thinks too highly of Dan. Really, I'm like, here you are, cutting my steak because my hands are cuffed, and I'm telling you to take the gristle off. Like, he's being a bit petulant about it. Like, for a criminal, you're asking a lot. I don't like the gristle. And that is really testing patience and seeing if Dan is just a pushover.
And I kind of wonder, in the original, I think it did something different. In the remake, kind of failed, where Dan's doing this because, well, the guy can't cut his own food, so he's doing it. And then when he asks about the fat, he's doing it begrudgingly, but he's like, you know, I know you're a prisoner, but I'm going to treat you like a guest.
Yeah. And treat you like a human being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he doesn't think of this. He's like, his point is he's going to take this guy in. They're going to get, he's going to get money in both movies, mm-hmm. but he also has this idea of justice. And he's like, I'm not going to treat you badly. You are going to prison, but I don't have to be an asshole to you until then.
Yeah, no, in the remake, it really does feel like Russell Crowe is testing, and he could see the look in his eye and trying to get the measure of the type of person he is. And I guess at that point, it's a way to hide that fork that he gets to later kill Kevin Durant with.
Which was awesome, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, see, and that's the weird thing. It's like they have this character and he's killing him. And I'm not quite sure what purpose that is, because as an audience, you're not sad the guy's dead.
No, and that's just it. That's because you're supposed to like Ben, and here's the guy who just burned down Dan's farm earlier.
And continues to be a dick.
But that's not why he's killing him.
No, not at
all. Just killing him because he's a dick to him. He could give a fuck about his farm.
That's what the whole setup is to make him appear like a real dick. So when he dies, you're happy about it, and it makes Ben look like a better person to the audience. I mean, he's doing something horrible, but he's doing something horrible to a shitty person anyway. So we're all okay with it because he's kind of charming.
See, and I don't get that he's... I didn't get that uptake in him being me viewing him better. He was still the same thug.
No, but I didn't ever thought Ben Wade as a thug.
No,
a lot of his gang members, sure, but not Ben.
Ben never really came across as a thug. He came across as amoral, and certainly more so in the remake, because he has less compunction about killing.
Oh, hey, no, the original, I don't see him as a thug.
He doesn't go out of his way to do it. It's usually Charlie who does it.
Yeah.
In some cases, if somebody says, say, like when they go get the cash box in the remake, and he doesn't check the guy who appears to be unconscious, and then the dude's taken hostage, and Ben just shoots both of them.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It solves two problems, because one, the guy didn't do his job and put the whole gang at risk, and, well, the other guy is, you know, got a weapon, so he just shoots them both. And so, yes, he has a code. He doesn't have a lot of moral compunctions against killing, but he's got to give him a reason to do it.
Yeah, but he keeps around Prince as his tool of choice.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Killing Tucker, that felt a little more malicious, but that was because Tucker was really poking and prodding and kind of asking for it.
Yes.
He's like, if I can't sleep, you can't sleep.
Yeah. Well, part of it, too, is it shows that Ben... He had a choice. He didn't have to kill Tucker. He could have killed anybody else in that group at that time. Everybody else was asleep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right? He could have killed anybody. He chose the guy that was the least likable.
Yeah.
Right.
But and also the guy one that was most likely going to put the group at risk. It's the same rules.
Yeah.
He never changed his rules.
This guy, that guy totally was going to put everybody at risk. And he none of the other guys could trust him, let's be honest. None of them.
None of them.
And I would have enjoyed it better if one of the other guys had sort of
He was there for Hollander's interests.
Yeah.
Because Hollander was in league with the railroad and had done business with the Butterfield Company as well. So there was a financial reason for that guy to be there.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I might have enjoyed it more if there had been something coming up and it hadn't have been Wade. Yeah. Like, he'd been killed simply because he was putting the group in danger and somebody else took him out.
I think it would have made more sense.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah. And it would have been...
Because, you know, anytime Ben does something in the original, it's usually driven by something else. Like... He saves Dan because Dan saved him in the bar.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, in the bar, and then in the hotel, when the brother came. And see, Tucker, they used him wrong again. They used a lot of their supporting characters wrong. Because Tucker and Hollander have no interest in seeing Ben Wade get back safely.
No.
Because they do not want Dan to get this money. So
no.
Why?
No, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
See, and that should have been what caused him to die. Like, Dan should have had to kill him.
Yeah.
Because
or even
came
Wade.
Maybe it's just because it's the town interest. I mean, they all pretty much got deputized to do it.
Yeah.
I mean,
but yeah,
Dan was pretty much forced into it in the original film. until the offer was made by Butterfield, he's like, okay, yeah, you know, because this is the only way I can support my family.
Yeah, but well, yeah, what I was trying to say
he kind of jumps at it a little too quickly in the remake.
He does a little bit, yeah. But that's the thing is if Dan doesn't get the money, they get his land, right? So Tucker's motivation wouldn't be there to protect Wade.
No,
there could have been a great scene there where he's trying to get Wade. Wade go there instead of poking at him. He should have been trying to figure out how to let him escape, take the horses, and then Dan's out the money, and they get his land.
Or he still has a bit of stick up his butt for Dan, and is needling Dan. Dan ends up, he's like, he threatens Dan, and Dan has to defend himself.
Yeah. I mean, nobody in that group likes Tucker. I mean, even when they arrive at the Evans home to do the switch off, and the barn is still smoking, and then there's Doc Potter, and he's like, did you have something to do with this? You should be ashamed of yourself.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I think there could have been a better moment there, because Tucker at that point says, just doing my job. I think Doc could have kind of come up with something like, yeah, Wade's a thug, but at least he's honest about being a thug. Like, at least he's honest about doing terrible things.
Mm-hmm.
You're just, it's just your job. Wade's just doing his job.
No, he enjoyed every second.
Every second of it. And, and that's clear in that opening scene. But yeah, I don't think that Dan would have gone after Tucker. It would have been out of character for Dan to go after him, but it would have been completely in character for Wade to take him out.
Yeah.
If
now, Tucker, I mean, what they should have done to lead up to that was more mistreatments of Tucker, and because part of it is noticing Dan struggling against his own nature and being taken advantage of.
Yeah.
And I don't think Ben's likes seeing it when he's trying to fight against his own nature. Like he's a brave coward in many respects, Dan. He's you know, he's scared for his family, and he's trying to do the right thing to support them at the same time. And he wants to be viewed better by his sons and his wife.
Oh, I was going to say too, there's some very subtle differences between the original and the remake, between the first meeting of Wade and Dan. In the original, you've got Glenn Ford, he's sitting there as Wade, just offering money. He's like, okay, so this is for the cattle, this is for this. And then he's about to let it go, and he's like, oh no, what about your son's time? Like, he offers him the money.
Yes.
In the remake, he sort of demands it, and it feels dirtier somehow.
No, he. I mean, yes, he is kind of demanding it, but he's doing it for a reason, because he sees the sheriff coming around. So he, in the original, it's a stalling tactic, but and it is in this one as well. Except they just handle it a little differently, where it's not a deliberate setup. In this one, he's seeing the sheriff coming around with his men to come get Wade, so he's got to he uses that to stretch it out. It was like, well, I'm getting paid, I might as well get paid more while I'm stretching it out to keep Wade here.
And then there's the alternative bit too, where in the original Butterfield offers $200.
Yes,
and in the remake he demands $200.
They don't set that up as well, where he jumps at it because that's exactly what he needs. And $200 becomes a bit of a sticking point in this one a little later on. But yeah, it does feel like he's a little more forceful, Dan, when it comes to what he needs.
Yeah.
Except from the people he desperately needs to do it to. You know, he doesn't stand, I mean, I guess he tries to stand up to Hollander a little bit, but not really.
Yeah.
Hollander just says, your land's worth more to me with you off of it.
Yeah, I may have missed it in the remake, but in the original, he went to try to borrow that
he
money.
He does.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, and he already isn't in debt to Hollander, which I kind of thought I'm fine with.
Yeah.
He can't get it from Hollander, which I thought was really interesting.
Yes.
Because in the original, Hollander doesn't have it to give because nobody can pay anything back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I really liked that.
Yeah. That's brilliant. Yeah. This is a whole town of people who can't afford anything.
He seems to be well-liked in town.
Mm.
And in this one, in the remake, he's just being taken advantage of.
Yeah.
And you got to make, it seems like everybody around him is villainous. And it's kind of terrible in a lot of respects, because they take a lot of that optimism of the original and take it away. That's the real big difference and probably kicker about the remake, because I mean, it is really well made.
It's sort of like the moral of the original was like, even if you are a bit down on your luck, to do the right thing.
Costs you nothing.
It's better. And it's better for your soul. Sometimes, because he tells his wife, I just have to do this. Mm-hmm. Like, she's saying, no, you'll still get your money. Everything's fine. He's like, no, I simply have to do this. It's about how he feels about himself, how he's going to live and continue to live.
And Wade offers him considerably more when they're waiting in the hotel to just let him go because, you know, he could just let his men gun down this guy holding him, gun down Dan. But he's like, I'd rather just take the easy way. I've got lots of money. You want to do this for $200? I'll give you $1,000.
Yeah.
It's like, in the original, it seems like he's buying his soul. And in this remake, it's sort of, I don't know what it is. It's sort of, the gut punch of the remake seems to be the moral is, you can do all the good you want. You'll still get fucked in the end.
Yeah. Well, they handle it differently. I mean, it is about pride in both movies. But they try to dig a little deeper, saying when he got his foot shut off, that $198 and change, basically $200, was what he got paid to keep quiet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and I like the bit in the...
And they weren't paying him to...
To walk...
Well, they weren't paying him to walk away. They were paying they could walk away.
Yes. Yeah.
And I thought that was a brilliant, brilliant line. You pointed that out during the break.
Good.
And it's so good. And that was something... A couple of times where the lines in the Mangold remake were really good.
There were some really good lines in there. There's a really great bit when Wade's trying to bribe Dan in the remake where he says, how do I explain where this money came from?
Yep. Right? I did enjoy that. That's a good point.
It's a very good point. Right.
Yeah. You get to go and I'm suddenly rich. Yeah. That's not going to be suspicious at all.
No. And people around town aren't going to ask questions either.
Yeah. No, I did like that. And I there's so much about the remake that I really liked, but what I really liked about the original is the whole point. There's two things sort of happening there with Dan, right? Is he refuses to give up on his farm, right? Mm-hmm. Once he starts a job, he sees it through to the end. That's exactly what's happening with Wade. It's about finishing the job, mm-hmm. right? It's not about anything else. It's about finishing the job that he started. So it carries mm-hmm. through all of his stories.
Yeah, right? And that's a very similar theme that we talked about in High Noon.
Yes,
it's finishing the job.
Yeah, it's finishing the job, regardless of the consequences.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, we got to get to the end of this. This is what's going to happen.
Yeah, and that did... They tried to give Dan too much backstory in the remake. And you're right, you sort of came across...
It does work against it in a lot of ways. Yeah. And you... As you get closer to the ending, you realize Dan's not getting out of this. He is over in his head.
Yeah.
And he's never going to get out of this. I would like to say it's heartbreaking what happens to him, but it kind of isn't because it's just inevitable.
Yeah.
And the only reason they get... as far as they do
is because
Ben wants to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ben could have left at any point. He could, that movie would have been over probably 45 minutes in.
Yep. Well, there's a whole point where Wade gets away and it's at the halfway mark.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah. That, that insertion of the,
that drove me fucking nuts.
And, I see what they were trying to do with the whole railroad workers thing. You know, you got the Asian workers and then there's the few guys who are running the operation. And one of them is the brother to a victim from 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay, I see what they're trying to do in the original. The guy who gets shot. No, the guy who gets shot is the brother later on from the funeral.
Butterfield's the other employee.
The funeral that's happening in town while he's in the hotel is the brother from the guy from the stagecoach who gets shot. Yeah. So we actually get to see all those events, and now we've got something that we never really see happen in the movie, and this revenge story that we never are a part of. It doesn't work as well.
And Wade mentioned something like, how like his brother that he shot was an asshole. And at this point, I have no backstory. I'm inclined to believe Wade that this guy was an asshole because we've only met his brother and he's an asshole.
Yeah. Yes. And the one thing that Wade establishes in both movies is he does not lie.
Yeah.
There's no dissembling from this guy. He says exactly what he means.
And that's good.
And he's a pretty good judge of character.
He's a very good judge of character.
And yeah, his gang's really loyal and they talk about what he'd done for them.
And I don't know what that is.
And that's the problem. They never tell you what he'd done for them.
Because, yeah. I mean, realistically, they do all the dirty work.
Yeah. Although he's a hell of a draw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, especially when he got the drop on his entire gang.
See, and I did enjoy that character. Like, he's so evil, but it makes sense. Like, he has this unyielding loyalty. Like, mm-hmm. when the other guys question that Ben got caught and we don't have to save him, he takes that guy who's like, we have to save him. And when these other people that they get, they say they're going to pay him money if they gun down the rancher yeah. and then get Ben back, he starts gunning down these guys because they're shooting at the wrong person. He's like, not the black hat.
Yeah. Stop shooting the black hat. Yeah, because he offers the townspeople of contention money because the gang is around seven people and there's five in the hotel. So it's a fairly even fight. And mm-hmm. they just have all this money from the recent heist going, well, $200 for anybody who guns down one of the captors. Suddenly, the gang of seven turns into like 30 people. Yeah. And of course, everybody walks out. That's something I didn't like in the original. They just hand over the guns and walk away. In the remake, they put down their guns and then they get gunned down.
Yeah.
But
goes a lot more to the character of the different characters of the two gangs. Right? Yeah. Remember, in the original, Wade's gang is essentially nonviolent.
They have a code. Right? Yeah. They have a very strict code.
And I think it's not handled as well, but I think the point of what we're seeing along the way is Wade doesn't like the people in his gang that much. Yes, they're fiercely loyal, but they're doing horrible things in his name. And so mm-hmm. as we're building to this climax of this movie, I think he's just parting ways with them. He's like, this is nonsense. I shouldn't be associated with these people. I need a higher character around me. I mean, he still's very confident in his abilities to get away.
Yes. Yeah. And I think his exposure to Dan sort of makes him realize that is part of that whole realization is that I'm better than the people I hang out with. And this guy is the type of person who I needed to be around to show me that. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, and I think maybe the point of the thing with the waitress that, you know, I love it mm-hmm. first sight moment, which just feels like he's just trying to get laid while he's in town. But by the end of it, there does feel like he's kind of over what this life he's in.
Yeah.
And you get the sense that maybe he does want to settle down. He wants to run away with a girl or a girl like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in the remake, it almost seemed like they already knew each other. Well, they did.
They did. In both movies, they knew each other.
In both movies, they talked about the same place. It took a while for
them. They had to figure it out.
Yeah. How about this woman named Velvet that everybody remembers?
But I think in the remake, there was more. They were playing a game, right? It wasn't like I'm trying to remember you. He's just sort of playing a game with her. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the remake or the original, it felt like they were just getting to know each other. Right.
It felt like they were getting to know each other, but because of the way they talked, it's sort of like, oh, you were there at that time and we never actually met. Yeah. Like they have a shared parallel past.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, in the remake, I just felt that they knew each other and this was just a game they played. Right?
Well, let's find out by listening to the trailer and we'll mm-hmm. talk some more about 310 to Yuma and wrap up this conversation.
Probably cheaper just to let me rob the damn thing.
See which way he rode, Evans?
Like they were headed to Bisbee.
Hands up.
22 robberies, over $400,000 in losses.
Y'all notice he didn't mention any of the lives I've taken.
We will have Ben Wade convicted and hanged, and we will pay to make it happen.
I'll come.
Boys, where are we headed?
Taking to the 310 to Yuma day after tomorrow.
Shouldn't have told him that.
Relax, friend. Now if we get separated, I know what I made up.
He's a killer, Daniel.
Then someone ought to have the decency to bring him to justice.
I want to come with you.
Well, you can.
What are you doing out here, Dan? You got a family to protect.
Don't talk to me like you know me, Wade. We ain't friends.
I told you to stay home.
I left home.
You turn around right now.
Your boy ain't protecting you. He's following me.
You say one more word, I'll cut you down right here.
I like this side of you, Dan.
You're so sure that your crew's coming to get you?
They're lost without him. Like a pack of dogs without a master.
Where'd they take him?
I don't know. Let me out of here!
Sure as God's vengeance, they're coming.
Coming this way, I've seen him.
There's gonna be 30, 40 more guns out there now.
Boss, you in there?
Sorry, mister, but I'm not gonna die here today.
It's just you left, Dan. Just you and your boy.
This town's gonna burn!
Call him off.
Why should I?
Because you're not all bad.
Yes, I am.
You just remember that your old man walked Ben Wade to that station when nobody else would.
All right, that was 310 to Yuma from 2007. And we were arguing during the commercial of which son in which movie was the bigger shit.
I'd say the remake, he was a dick. Like, just out the gate, constantly.
I think Jay's right. It's more the exposure to him because we have so much more of it in this remake. Yeah. But it's really integral to this version of Dan to have this asshole of a son. But his son's not an asshole so much. He just doesn't understand his father, mm-hmm. which is a very typical trope.
Right? You could tell the son's been raised well. Like, he's a good shot. He's also confident in his own abilities, wants to be part of this gang to take Wade in, and is told no, goes anyway.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think, and that's part of it. He knows about his father's ability. He knows his father's a good shot. But he just doesn't understand why his dad seems so weak mm-hmm. to him.
Well, this is the whole point of it, though, and this is the real trope of the whole thing. Is you have all these young boys who are like, oh, you know, my father used to be this great man. He's a coward, like glorifying war and glorifying all this carnage, and not realizing what it actually entails.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In some regards, I think maybe the son being the one to follow him into town makes more sense than the wife in
yes.
the original.
Yeah,
they accomplish similar things where he does. The wife's basically trying to talk him out of what appears to be a suicide mission, and like, you don't have anything to prove to him. To Dan himself, yes, he has a lot to prove. He's got to prove it to himself that he's not the man that his wife and his children think he is. And without doing this, regardless if they tell him to walk away and do the smart thing, they're still going to view him as a coward.
Yeah.
That gets taken advantage of.
It's both. I think it was fine for the wife to follow him that one time because it's got this other level to it where he feels he has to be the hero. But it's, yeah, I don't know.
I never feel like that moment with the son accomplishes the same thing. Like, I don't know if he actually wins the pride of his son, and maybe just
no.
for going through with what he's doing. But, you know, he is literally shot in the back.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the son saves him a boatload of times just getting to the train. You know, that smart move with the distracting him with the cattle.
Yes.
Yeah.
And yeah, running prints over with the cattle. I love the way
that was good.
Yeah, it was very edifying to see that happen to him.
And it's a smart move. Like, just open a few gates and the guy's not paying attention. Cattle will do it and they'll just run. You can't get enough shots off to stop those cattle.
No.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a good way to block everybody's shots and opportunities to shoot at them.
Yes.
Yeah.
And do some damage to the gang at the same time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the only thing he proved to his son is that heroism is pointless. you want to do this, son? You want to die for basically nothing? Go ahead.
Yeah.
And that comes back to what one of the many reasons that ending was not as satisfying as the original ending. I see why they did it the way they did, right? Because it is by far the more realistic ending.
Mm-hmm.
That's what would have most likely happened, right up to the point where Wade shoots his entire gang with...
Yeah, that didn't make a lot of sense.
No.
And then he just willingly gets on the train. Yeah. And at that point, William has a drop on him too and decides not to shoot him.
Yeah.
He almost like he's got more pride in Ben than he does in his own dad.
Yeah, and that's the whole, like, this is part of the movie I was like, ah, crap.
It's
like,
just baffling to me.
Yeah, no, he seems to like Ben a hell of a lot more.
Yeah.
And because there's that one point where he's telling, like, Ben, you could have killed us, and Ben's like, nah, I would have killed you. Like, this kid, he doesn't think anything of his father, but he hero worships Ben.
Well, because Ben's the kind of man he thought his father should be. I think there's a realization at the end of the movie for his son saying, you know, realizing that, no, you know what, my dad's right. You don't need to be this kind of man to be a man.
Yeah. But, and the sacrifices he had to make in not standing up sometimes to protect his family.
Yeah.
You know, you don't shoot the landowner's lackey because that's going to get you nothing but more grief.
Yeah. Well, and that's in the beginning of the original movie, too. You don't go standing up to Ben Wade's gang when you literally don't have a gun on you. What good is that?
Yeah.
Like, you can't always stand up. That was sort of the bit that they sort of missed it, I think, a little bit in both movies. You can't always do...
There's a discussion about stubbornness versus duty in both these movies, especially the remake.
Very much so, yeah.
Yeah, and the difference between the two.
Yeah, because, I mean, they give them the additional backstory of the young son who's ill, which is why he's in the dry climate of Bisbee.
Which is why they haven't picked up and left in the middle of this drought, is because they have to stay there, right? And I liked that additional little bit of motivation. There's a lot of
that
additional motivation and explanation about the characters in
the remake.
And he
trusts more of his story to Ben than he ever did to his own family.
Ew.
Like, they think he's a war hero, lost his foot defending the Capitol during the Civil War. He lost his foot when he's fighting Ben. They're fighting, and when he's getting his ass kicked, he's like, "I didn't lose my foot defending the Capitol. Try telling your son you lost it in retreat, and I never saw a battle."
Yeah,
like he couldn't already be looked more down upon from his sons than he already had been.
And the thing is, like, the sons, I don't think they'd ever understand. The whole point is, like, if he's in retreat, he's in retreat with other people.
Yeah.
When you're in a war, and, like, the people in charge are making the orders. You're just like the ants in the ant farm. They're watching. You're nothing.
Yeah.
So don't tell me to be a hero against, like, another army. The kids aren't going to get it because, like, they're idiots. But
well, they're kids. Yeah, everything's kind of black. Oh, and kids white are dumb. Very simple.
Well, and I mean, there's a certain expectation of men in the Wild West, right? That if you're not a bow-legged, swaggering gunslinger, you aren't much of a man, right? Mm-hmm. And in the original, Dan doesn't even carry a gun. He doesn't have a need to.
Yeah.
He's a rancher, right?
And the thing
he's good with one though.
Oh, he's very good with one.
Which is, there's that.
Because, he was part of the sharpshooters. Yeah. They say that in the remake that he was actually in the sharpshooter division, despite the fact he never really got to do that.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
And I would assume something similar is in the original. They just don't ever say it. He's got some skills that...
He actually says, "I was the best shot in my regiment."
I was the best shot, but that was one part of the original that drove me nuts. They say he was the best shot in the regiment, and they give him a shotgun.
Oh, that hurts,
which is
so
the
much.
Dumbest thing. Like, you give the worst shot the shotgun, because that covers a lot of area. You give the best shot the good gun.
Yeah, no, that bothered me a lot all the way through the movie.
Yeah,
I mean, it made sense for him to have the shotgun in the hotel room.
Right? Oh yeah, but they just wasted him the entire time by having him carry a shotgun the rest of the time.
Yeah, they really did. And that was actually bothering me as well. Thank you for pointing that out.
No, thank you. Thank you for noticing as well.
We get to see in the original Dan use some of those skills where he's shooting guys off roofs and stuff and very pointed single shots. I don't really get to see those kind of skills from Dan in the remake, despite them telling us that he's good at it. We never actually get to see those moments where he is.
Yeah, and that would be good. Like,
half
what?
The time, Ben's pulling him down from getting shot.
Yeah.
It's weird, because it's sort of like they basically replaced what could have been some good moments where you see that part of Dan with what they wanted was like a big action sequence with a ton of people and a ton of guns and these two guys just going through this hail of bullets.
It takes away from Dan's character even more, because he's this supposedly this war hero. You find out he's not, and then really you never get to see the fact that he was capable,
because Ben's saving him the entire time
he
gets no redemption in this movie. It's a pain in the ass.
I mean, during the dinner, his younger son says, like, he is a great shot when he's shooting gophers and foxes or whatever, but he's like, well, shooting a man is very different, son. Ben's like, no, it ain't.
Like, and when they're adding, like, when they added the additional portion where they're going through the pass, because you have to add another bit where people are shooting at them and they have the Apaches on the ridge shooting at them, that would have been a good moment that they waste completely by having Ben be a hero.
Instead, they get, have Dan get grazed by a bullet and wait, Wade rescues him again.
Yeah.
Right, like it's really does change the dynamic in comparison to the original.
And they could have done something really great with that, where Dan does manage to kind of get the upper hand in that gunfight, and Ben, you could see Ben maybe getting some sort of respect for this guy.
In the remake, it really feels like Dan is Ben's project.
Yeah.
His pet, really.
Yeah.
Well, in the remake, Dan is never in control.
No.
In the original, Dan is always in control.
Yeah. Yes.
Even like the other guy is...
There are times where he's struggling, especially because it's usually dialogue-driven struggles, especially in that hotel room. And you could really see him seriously thinking about that offer. And he's like, just shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Because if you keep talking, I might take your offer.
Yeah. Or I might kill you.
Yeah. And neither one of these things is going to be good for me.
Yeah.
And it seems interesting.
And my soul.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, he's struggling with his soul. But I think actually at one point, I get the feeling that he's like, okay, we're up to $10,000. That seems like a lot of money. I don't think I'm going to get that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because when you get so high, you have to believe that somebody's lying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, I never feel like Dan's in control in that remake.
No.
Whereas in the original, like I said, even when he's struggling, he's still in control. He's in control of what's happening in that, not what's happening in the room, but he's in control of himself, and he's always aware of what he needs to do.
Yeah.
Like, right. I love the moment where the guy whose brother's been shot comes into the room. He just wants to kill Ben, and he gets the gun away from the guy because he's like, no, I'm here to deliver this man. That's my job, and that's what I'm going to do. Yeah. So that's when he saves him again in the hotel room, which is really great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it plays so much better, and it makes you believe the relationship a lot better, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because Ben respects this man who's so in control of himself and his situation. It probably reminds Ben of Ben, because that's the way Ben is, right? He's used to being in control.
Yeah.
Right. So he's got this man who really does mirror himself in a different way because Dan's a good guy, right? Whereas Ben uses that control to do pretty reprehensible things, right? So there's that sort of light and dark happening there, but they're the same man.
Yeah, right? They do feel like they're different halves of the same person.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like it could have been, something could have happened and Dan could have gone down a bad path. Something could have happened, Ben could have gone down a different path.
Yeah, and that whole aspect really was missing from the remake. It really felt more like a war of wills.
Yeah, Ben's always winning it.
Yeah, always.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, there's no point where I felt Dan was getting anywhere. Like, I've got the downer ending well before the ending happened.
Yeah.
Like, it just feels like a downer.
I mean, really, it just feels like Ben Wade's trying to give Dan what he needs most and to be a hero in the eyes of his children and his family. And he doesn't have to.
Why would he even do that?
Eh, why not? Let's help this guy and I'll escape later.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Yeah.
And he has no reason to, because he has no reason to like Dan.
No.
Right? In the original, he has lots of reasons to like Dan.
Yeah.
But he has none whatsoever in this remake.
Yeah, I think they were trying to get it so that he did it more because he liked his son. He couldn't give a shit about Dan, but I don't even know if they played that right.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we do see those moments where, I mean, these decisions are all driven about feeding and protecting his family.
Yeah.
That's everything. So, I mean, Ben's there for most of those decisions, even when, you know, they stole his cattle at the beginning of the movie. He's already getting a measure of this guy, not knowing he's ever going to see him again, but he's kind of in a place of, why make more enemies?
Yeah. Well, and I think to a certain extent, in the remake, it feels more like he kind of pities Dan.
Yeah. It really feels like pity.
Yeah. It's not liking the man. I mean, I think he does to a certain extent. When they're finally in the hotel room, there's some moments there where they have that dialogue and they're kind of getting a measure of each other. But Dan never feels as strong in this remake as he does in the original.
Yeah, in some respects, it seems, when you're talking about pity, it seems in many ways Ben won't waste the bullet.
Yeah.
On this poor guy.
Yeah.
And I think that part of the reason that Ben feels a little bit differently towards Dan in the remake and in the original is he's met his family. Most of Ben's victims, he's never met their families, right? He doesn't never meets the wife. He never meets the kids. Never gets to sort of see that family dynamic and sort of see what the impact of that loss would be on those families, right? So I think that's part of his motivation in both films as well. Is he's like, I know this man. I've met his family. I ate food with them. They fed me. I think that's part of his motivation in both movies. I think it's a lot more, apparent in the remake, though. There's another reason for him to like Dan or feel any obligation to him.
Mm-hmm. Right? No,
especially
like
early on.
But I think that's the whole point. I think he's actually more interested in his son. Dan's just there. Because, I mean, the son shows up when he's got the drop on everybody, and the son manages to get
the drop on Ben.
It's like he likes the son. Dan's just there. The son is the one he's actually interested in. And that's why he would let Dan do it, maybe. Because I'm doing this for the kid. I don't care if this is for Dan.
Well, I wanted to mention Butterfield, because he also had an interesting arc in this film. He was the guy who owned the stagecoaches. He's actually on the stagecoach in the original film, and he really just feels like a businessman.
Yeah.
And it's in his best interest to get Wade out of here so he's not getting any more of his stagecoaches knocked off.
Mm.
But we actually get to see him become a better man as well, in a more background kind of way, where, you know, he's arranging the men, but he's going along, and he's like literally the last guy. He's like, I will walk every foot to that train station right to the end. Yeah. I mean, yes, he does chicken out.
He does, but
like a lot of other people, but he still offers to pay Dan to walk away. He's like, if it's about the money, then here, take it. It's not worth your life.
Yeah.
Yeah, and exactly. It's not that it's not so much that he chickens out. Is the fact is, he realizes in his mind it's an unwinnable situation, and he's better off to cut his losses, as it were, and save this other man's life.
Yeah.
In the process.
And he's being smart and pragmatic about it all. But at the same time, he's grown to like Dan. Yeah. And he doesn't want to see him die. And he's made steps to take care of the family as well.
Yeah.
So there is a bond has been made there.
And what I didn't get, this is something, I don't know if I missed something or I was confused about it. I know he has dealings with the railroad in the remake. But at the end of the day, he runs the stagecoaches. Why is he like back in the railroads that are probably going to put him out of business?
Well, he's probably a smart businessman. He realizes his stagecoach business is going to last forever.
In the remake, he works for the railroad.
He does, yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought he's got
a financial interest.
Yeah.
And I thought he was just stagecoaches in the remake.
And let's face it, I mean, the stagecoaches are still well needed, because it's not like trains are going everywhere. Yeah. It's one route. So it's
the
stagecoaches are going to be needed between the towns.
Yeah. It's less routes, though.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a railroad payroll coach, right? And I don't understand why they wouldn't just run it up the rails that they've already built.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, because that's normally how they would do it, right? Mm-hmm. Is use the rail to get them to where they're working.
You take it from the smaller towns that are on the more outskirts, that aren't close to the railroad.
Yeah, exactly.
But this was maybe the railroad wasn't to Bisbee yet, because they were constructing it outside of contention.
Yeah.
So,
but they wouldn't take the payroll to Bisbee anyhow. They would have taken it to the camp.
Yeah, right? That's true.
Right, and there's a flaw in that whole logic there, but we'll forgive it.
Yeah, because there's a lot of them in the remake.
Yeah, there are a lot of them.
Unless you're like us and poking holes, you're not going to see it as much.
Yeah.
No.
Sometimes takes a big conversation to realize how many there actually are.
And how much you realize that. It's like, I enjoyed watching the remake, don't get me wrong.
I did, yeah.
But the more I realize that it's still far, far subpar to the original.
Like, I would rewatch both these movies now, having watched them back to back, the 57 all the way.
Yeah, I mean, there's
I'm all for more of a positive ending, too.
True, and something about, like, a character study. Like, I kind of really got a feeling I knew Ben Wade, and I knew Dan,
and Butterfield.
Yeah. I knew, and the town drunk, knew him.
Yeah. It's because they don't spend a lot of time on action. It really is the character study.
Mm-hmm.
They give you more action in the remake, and that might be more satisfying to most audiences, but it doesn't give you as much of a sense of who these people are.
No.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very clever way to be that engaging in the filmmaking of the original, with very little actually happening action-wise.
Yeah, they're hiding. Yeah, there's
and
little
you still feel tension.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about the last 45 minutes of the original film takes place in that hotel room.
Yes.
Right? I mean, there's very little about the journey, whereas this movie was more about the journey to the hotel room than it was about what happened in the hotel.
Oh yeah, there's that, a lot that goes on between Bisbee and Contention.
Yeah, and that was kind of what bothered me. I don't really care about the Jimmy to Contention.
Well, let's his gang's got a little. They should be way behind, but now they're not so far behind. So we got to make this shortcut through Apache Land.
It's 80 miles the other way, and they just catch to have
another. Just to have another conflict.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems they added several conflicts that really didn't need to be there.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, they added that Apache conflict just to kill
Indians.
Well, pretty much, and to give themselves a device for Ben to get away. That's really the only purpose of that was so that Ben could get away.
Yeah.
And well, briefly.
To get to the train depot, so because he never gets the keys to his cuffs, so he's looking a way to get out of his cuffs, and then of course he finds the one person that he pissed off 6 years ago.
That's the other, that whole section where he gets away and gets to the train there's the whole thing.
It's incredibly awkward.
And then they're just there. It's a different movie. It doesn't even belong. You could cut that bit out and not miss anything.
Here's a shitty part of the movie.
You could completely ditch all of that.
That could have been cut out of that film.
Yeah.
They could have given the doctor, Alan Tudyk, more in town, just like they did with Alex, right, where he's watching, and it leads to his death.
I mean,
right?
He's got like the key moments where he shoots outside. You know, he's the inexperienced guy on guard, and he's shooting at shadows. But when you have those moments that don't build anything and show you his character, that really is his last moment before he gets killed.
Well, except for creaming that guy with the shovel,
was great.
Did you see me hit that guy with the shovel, and then he gets shot in the back?
Yeah. I know.
Everybody gets shot in the back.
Yeah.
But what happens in the original where they string him up in the hotel?
Oh, it's awful.
And like his wife comes in, she's like, it's gutting when I saw him just hanging there. I'm like, oh, these guys are animals.
Yeah. I think that's a moment right there for Ben, because he does not look comfortable with what's happening in that lobby.
No.
In the original. He does not look at all comfortable with what they're doing, because this goes against his moral code.
Yeah.
They're killing a man without purpose.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right. They're
terrorizing.
Yeah. And he said, you get one more shot and make it good. And that's it. He's like, you're just going to get this shot to get me away. There's a purpose to that one shot. If you fuck it up, I don't care.
Yeah.
You're going to get shot anyway. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
But it's just, they're getting out of control and he is not on board with that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the pivotal moment for Ben, is when he realizes that his gang is not who they thought they were. They don't subscribe to his moral code the way he thought they did. He realizes that he's the only one keeping them in line. And I think there's a moment there in the remake where that's supposed to happen, but it just kind of...
It gets muddied.
It gets muddied too much. And I think that's why that final bit doesn't work as well for us. Mm-hmm. Because there's no clear moment like there is in the original. And I think that the Tudyk moment, or the Alex moment, should have been carried over into the remake, and it would have been a lot more powerful. His death would have been extremely powerful if they had done it that way, instead of the kind of the tragic but not productive way he died in the remake.
Yeah, because you could see Ben, even the remake, Russell Crowe would be like, the doc, he's... doesn't like him, but he doesn't outright hate him.
Yeah, his one heroic moment gets him killed.
Yeah. I mean, to be at the end of the day, Doc helped him get away. I believe that would be something he would take. And if you delayed his death to end the thing, it would make more sense for Ben. Mm.
And it would have been allowed them to carry over that arc from the original as well for that particular character.
Yeah.
Because it was very powerful.
And it's very personal for Dan as well.
Yeah.
Because this is somebody he knows.
Yeah. And likes.
Yeah.
And he has troubles, but it seems like he was getting past them, because at one point he comes into the guy, he's like, are you here to have a drink? He's like, I kind of don't want a drink right now.
Yeah, I mean, they're both growing as people, and they're doing it together, so that's a bond that these two share.
Yeah, like he was starting on a new path. Like, who knows? Had he survived this whole thing, he might have gone back to Bisbee, and he might have stopped drinking. He might have done something. Who knows?
Could have been the next mayor or sheriff.
Yeah, he could have found his new purpose. He's like, I feel good now.
Well, I think he likes being a vet and a doctor, but I think that he was also tired of only working on animals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Oh, no, but I'm talking about the original drunk guy. Yeah. He would have gone back. But I think, too, he could have been like, I'm kind of more into medicine.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was the big bummer about the remake is you get somebody like Alan Tudyk in there and just kind of wastes him.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Perfect guy for that part, and then you don't give him the full part.
Yeah, no, he does that so well. And yeah, you just kind of, every moment he's on the screen, and he's fun, mm-hmm. right? Which is what he's supposed to be. His death was wasted.
It's weird. It's because it seems so abrupt. I was sitting there thinking, like, I guess he had to be on another set and they had to leave that day. Yeah. So they had to kill him.
Yeah, it did. It just felt utterly wasted and unnecessary in that moment.
Yeah. Right. Now, I got to say, I'm guessing James Mangold is a very fond of movies like this, because the themes of this, I mean, Logan is more of a remake of Shane in a lot of respects, and maybe one day we'll actually look at that a little more closely, but a lot of those themes are in his Logan movie as well. And I mean, a lot of that's in Old Man Logan, the graphic novel, but here's this tough guy who's walked away from that life, and he's being exploited on his land and everything else just to get by, and has to go through this big journey taking somebody somewhere before having a heroic moment again. And I think he handles it better in Logan than he certainly does here.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely in Logan.
Although he always has to kill his hero.
Yeah.
He didn't direct Unforgiven, because Clint Eastwood did. But again, yes. Unforgiven is a classic example of that as well, right?
Yeah.
Right. Where it's you've got the flawed hero, right, and the journey.
Yeah.
And killing the hero at the end. No, they kill his friend, but I don't think he dies at the end.
No, I don't think so.
No,
I can't remember.
Yeah.
But you want to watch a great Western? If you haven't seen it, you should.
Yeah, it's good.
Unforgiven is fantastic.
Yeah.
I also like Pale Rider.
I you know, there aren't very many Clint Eastwood Westerns I don't like. Actually, I don't think there are any that I don't like.
Yeah, no, we went through a whole thing when the video store had just a ton of Westerns. Yeah. We did the whole thing.
Yeah.
Logan, it was handled better. But yeah, maybe he just likes the downer ending.
Yeah.
Which you don't always need. Like, sometimes I can get it, but in this one, I just really don't see. You didn't have to.
Yeah, I mean, he comes off a little bit more like, okay, he redeemed himself and he's a bit of a martyr in Logan. He's not really a martyr in this one. I don't know if much has changed.
No. And in the original, he would have been gunned down, right? Yeah. I mean, because there's that moment there where Wade saves him.
Yes.
And then they get on the train together instead of as the train's pulling away. That's what should have happened in this one as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's going to go back as a hero to his family.
Yes.
And the whole point of the end is Ben doesn't give a crap if he's sent to Yuma. He's already escaped.
Yeah,
he's
twice. Just,
twice.
He doesn't care. Yeah. The only reason he's offering him money is because it's more convenient.
Yeah, he willingly hands over his gun and gets... when he gets on the train, like,
which makes it seem even more pointless. Yeah, I hated that.
And then he whistles for his horse, like, it's going to be more fun to wrestle the gun away later. Like, I don't understand what you're doing.
And he does it for his horse, which horses will not be able to keep up with that train for very long. So either he's going to kill his horse with exhaustion,
or he's going to escape within the next few minutes. Yeah.
And then why?
Well, exactly. When he could have just walked away instead of getting back on the train. No, and that's why the ending of the
original works so much better. Nobody would have stopped him. Nobody would have stopped him.
Hell no. They've already seen what happened.
Yeah. He gunned down his own gang. Nobody's going to stop his ass.
Nobody's going to stop him. No, you're absolutely right. But I think that's why the ending in the original works so well, is because they forestalled that inevitable end by having Dan get on the train.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and his gang is still out there. His clever plans are still in motion. He's getting away, and it's not going to cost this man his life.
Exactly.
Because Dan's full agreement was to get him on the train. After that, it's none of his business anymore.
Yeah. Well, Dan's like, I deliver you Yuma. Then I walk away. I am done. I am paid. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
And that's the point.
But and
Ben's never going to come back Ben. Sorry. After Dan, because he likes him.
Yeah. And it still would have worked in the remake.
Yeah.
It still would have very well. I would even have minded seeing Dan get shot once and then having Ben pull him onto the train.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
That would have worked really freaking well.
Yeah.
Then maybe Ben fires back at his guys to get them to back off so the train can get away. Totally still would have worked for me.
Yeah.
Right? But the way Mangold handled it was it was clumsy and it was a little over the top. It was unnecessary.
Yeah, and he does not come off heroic.
No.
And for shooting of the gang, I would have more expected it. Again, I'm going back to like the son. I think if like they'd taken him hostage, I would see Ben shooting down his men to save the kid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Or even Dan's moment of redemption would have been when he gets shot. He turns around. He gets Prince before Ben pulls him onto the train. Mm-hmm. That would have worked really freaking well for me.
We needed that moment to see that he is a really good shot and a quick draw.
Yeah.
And we needed that moment where we see him shooting at somebody else. Exactly. And being good at making a hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And being as fast as or almost as fast as Wade, like that quick.
It shouldn't have been Charlie's line saying, "What a tough son of a bitch."
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like that line, actually.
It is a good line, but it shouldn't have been his.
It's weird.
Yeah, that wasn't Charlie's observation to make, because he didn't spend any time with Dan, not really.
No, and why is the admiration coming now?
Yeah, after you just gunned him down.
Yep.
By shooting him in the back.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
and multiple times.
Multiple times, yeah. No, I would have loved to seen the ending we just spoke about rather than the one that we got. I think it would have completely changed my feelings about the whole movie then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, overall, this was still a good ride for both. I think both movies are thoroughly enjoyable. I'd watch them both again. If I had a choice of which one to own, though, 57.
Oh, for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm all about the more optimistic ending because very few Westerns have them.
And it's I just, the whole charm of Ben in that one is so... Oh,
kudos to Glenn Ford. Like, I think he was actually offered the Dan role, and he's like, no, I want the Ben Wade role.
Like, he's I can see his seductiveness. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that has a lot to do with Glenn Ford as an actor. I mean, it was fun to see him play, they say, against type, but really they weren't. He's still playing that same charismatic, likable guy. He just happens to be a bad guy in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like we're saying, two sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's so likable in that movie, and I can't sing his praises enough. And, I still can't think of a better person than Russell Crowe. He was very well cast for this. He just didn't get to play the same type of character.
No.
Yeah, I don't know. I would have recast him.
I liked him because you could see those moments where he was playing the Glenn Ford type of character.
Yeah.
They were very brief, but you could see them.
Yeah.
Right? Because of all the action and stuff, it kind of took away from those moments. And that's the whole problem with the remake in the grander sense, is as a standalone film, it's great. But as a remake, it still fails because it's missing all those wonderful key elements that were in the original, which were the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's sort of, it's like you say, it's a standalone film. I think because we've seen the other one, we see the flaws more glaringly in between where they kind of... They put in explosions in exchange for character development.
Mm-hmm. And that's why we do this show.
Yep. And that is often the big flaws of remakes. They'll throw action in forsake character.
And we've seen a few where they try too hard to develop characters that were underdeveloped in an original.
Yeah.
And it didn't need to be done. So it's not always the same flaw, but there's this trend.
Yeah. Overall, it's a very capable remake.
Oh, for sure.
It's still not a superior one, though.
No.
I enjoyed both. I hope our audience does as well.
Yeah, I mean, what I say is, you know, as we're doing this, there's Westerns I've now seen through doing this podcast that I've never seen before. And my God, there's some amazing filmmaking that was happening with these Westerns way back in the 50s.
I got to say, well, that was the big genre of the 50s, or one of the big genres of the 50s. And I may have seen a lot of these with my dad when I was a kid or whatever, but growing a little older, I kind of veered away from the Westerns, except for maybe the Clint Eastwoods. And now going back to watch some of these, in some cases for the very first time, High Noon and 3:10, and I'm like, oh my God. How good are these? Like,
amazing.
And every time we do one, I'm just blown away by it.
Yeah. It's such a, like, I can see why they were probably the big thing. They were putting effort into these things.
Yeah.
Well, I noticed those characters, the
camera movements and stuff, and how they're setting up their shots. And, you know, modern filmmaking, the edits are really fast and quick. But they're slow, and you got these big tracking and crane shots, and they give you moments of the grandeur of the set. And that is I think I got more of that out of the original film than I did the remake, of just the innate beauty of mm-hmm. Arizona.
All right, I think that you just hit the nail on the head is it with the, these movies from the 50s and the early 60s even, is they're more about atmosphere, right? Mm-hmm. Like they create a mood, even just the way it looks. Which is really amazing when you've got, you're shooting in black and white.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right? And this was 57. Oh, yeah. He could, like, Delmer Daves could have shot this in color, no problem. They were already shooting in color at this point, but he wanted that
black and white
classic feel, and he used red filters to give it even a more drier look.
Like it was, you were in a drought. Like I felt dusty watching this movie. Yeah.
And then he did some things that just worked off brilliantly. In a cinematography kind of sense.
Yeah, it's both sweeping and intimate, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does, actually.
It does.
Yeah. If you only watch one of these two films, please watch the original.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And maybe just they are both older ones, too.
They're both worth watching.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. That's why I said if you only watch one.
And then, but like pair it with High Noon and then see how the difference, like you can see what we mean by reverse High Noon.
Absolutely. Well, I think this was a fun one. We're going to be moving into some stuff with a holiday-ish theme.
Some
or at
seasonal
least
stuff.
Seasonal stuff. We're now, this was our last November, so we're moving into the Christmas season. Happy Thanksgiving to the Americans who just had it. We're already a month out of ours, but
we're still dealing with leftovers.
Yeah, we're still dealing with leftovers.
But I hope you guys froze them.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah, no, you freeze a lot of them, and then you in like tiny containers, and then you still got leftovers.
That's right.
That's how you do it.
Okay, I don't have any.
Okay, well, neither do I.
Oh, that's because I sent them all with you guys.
That's right.
Yeah, true. I'll be honest. I ate most of them very quickly.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I like my leftover turkey.
Oh, it's so good. Like, if it wasn't so hot in the summer, I'd buy a turkey and cook it just a half turkey.
Yeah. We'll be heading into some holiday fare, and we do take requests as well. So as we head into 2018, if you have any fan challenges, we're always open to do some. Be clever with them, whatever you come up with. We'll be the judge of whether it's actually doable or not.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll become a future episode, but we've got no shortage of things to remake and things that have been remade.
Mm-hmm.
And we will continue to give them to you up until 2018, 2019, 2020. They're not slowing down.
No. Every day it seems a new remake's on the horizon.
Yes, yes. So we will definitely be covering some more.
We'll never be out of work.
No, we never will be, but we'll keep moving from different genres and things. So hopefully we have something for everybody on Invasion of the Remake. And you guys can help us out as well. Help your friends find the show. I mean, if you liked Horror Month and you have horror friends, or if you like the Westerns or comedies or whatever we do, please tell your friends how to find us and join our social media. We are at Invasion Remake on Twitter. 280 characters now, people.
Oh.
We're also Invasion of the Remake on Facebook. Please like the page and follow our posts there. And invasiontheremake@gmail.com if you want to email us. Please tell people how to find the show. You already know how, but if somebody has a different device than you, lots of different places. You can always stream us through your browser, through our Libsyn page. We're also on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, Blueberry, Spreaker, and
frickin' YouTube.
Yeah, frickin' YouTube.
Okay, that was on purpose, so there's no old beer now.
No, there's definitely no old beer now.
We have Jason conducting us.
That's right. I didn't even have to say it. And, you know, if you can drop us a 5-star rating and a review, that also helps other people get there.
Earballs.
On the show. Tells people who like shows like this how to find it. So please drop those ratings and reviews as well.
Please and thank you.
Yes, please. And yeah, and like we say, if you have a fan challenge, if you have something interesting that we may not have even heard of.
Yeah, I had a request for us to do another Star Wars episode. And when you hear this, that movie's probably just dropping. Mm-hmm. It'll be a little down the road when we get a chance to see it. But we may just do it anyway, like when we did A New Hope versus Force Awakens. And I'm really hoping I don't get a remake of Empire, but it might be worth the conversation just to have it. So, because apparently you guys love that episode, so we might just do one anyway, because we don't have to follow formula. It's our show.
Exactly.
So we can take a break and just do our Empire / Last Jedi talk.
And you don't have to force me to go see a Star Wars movie.
No.
So that may be coming in the near future, but not sure when we're going to get to it, so don't expect it to be like week of release or whatever.
Hell no.
Yeah.
Because I will not be going to theater week of release.
No. Oh, no. I won't have a chance to either. So
I just don't have a chance. I just won't.
Yeah.
Too many people.
We'll get to it when we get to it, but those of you who are asking for us to do that, we'll get to it at some point. It just might not be timed specifically with the film, because we advance record anyway, so regardless if we see it the week of release, it's still going to be 2 weeks out at least.
Plus, it'll be nice because, I mean, not everybody can get out that first week, so if we're a little delayed, more people will have seen it.
And also, and exactly, we want to get in there so we're not spoiling too much of the film, but trust me, we will do so. So before we ever do that episode, we will give you all sorts of spoiler, don't listen this episode before you, blah 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 blah. All right, well, that's it. 3:10 to Yuma. I love it, and god damn it, I'm late for the train.
Oh no.
So we better rush out of here before the posse comes and takes Sam away.
Yes. Sacrificial lamb again.
I'm not gonna say anything. Okay, it's not like you volunteered. Now it appears we're just sending you to jail.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
I continue to be Trish.
And we are out of here.
Change your mind, Dan. No one will think less of you.
No one can think less of me. 6 months from now, everything's gonna be green. Cows are gonna be fat. We might even see the steam from the train coming over the ridge. We'll be all right. But we won't make it through the next 6 days. If I don't do this.
Sorry, Dan. McElroy says 5 minutes.
You think it's too much for me? Decency to bring him to justice.
What are you thinking?
I'm not out there alone. You don't have a little faith in me.
I didn't wait as a gang. And they're out there tonight, somewhere.
If I don't go.